Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 15, delivered on March 1, 2016. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, Review for Exam 1. Exam 1 is all written, short answers. Five questions or problems, you answer any four of them. No, you don't answer all five and say, you find my best four of them. Don't do that, I will eat your ass. Okay. I have put up a grading rubric for the exams, written exams in class. It's on the My Finance Lab and in ReggieNet. Make sure you read it, you're responsible. One sentence, and it has to be complete, grammatically correct, with proper spelling. No text language. That means if you want to write you, Y-O-U, not that stupid you. If you want to write A-N-D, not a little plus symbol or something like that. I'm making you into business people. One of the things I hear from those business people is how pissed off they are that they get these kinds of informal, friendly text messaging responses. And they also get long responses to quick questions. That's why it's one sentence, and I stop. I just stop reading at one sentence. I want you to be compact in your answers. Straight up, tell me what you know. Now, some of the questions or problems are really straightforward. It's just sort of like a definition or an explanation. A couple of them will be more than showing me that you have the critical thinking to go beyond just the simple and see what I'm looking for. Give me a straight up answer for what I'm looking for that goes beyond just the definition itself. And I'm going to go through some possible questions or problems that I would expect you to be able to answer. And then I'm going to open it up for you to ask me questions after that. But do be aware that you come in here with a pencil and you can have a 4x6 note card, but that's it. No calculator, there's no math on this. It is all written answers showing me that you know beyond. I can test you all day long on the math stuff in the online facilities. This is where you show me that you can do more than just please a computer. That you can actually satisfy an inquiring superior in the workplace. So know that you have a pencil and your card. That's all you need for this exam. Don't have a cell phone out or anything like that. There are no calculations involved. That's another thing too. A formula is not an answer. As a matter of fact, giving a formula in an answer is something that would be inappropriate. Because I'm not looking for a formula. I'm looking for you to explain something to me, okay? So know that, that you're not going to impress me. And if you try to go long-winded using commas and pretending that you're not using multiple sentences, I do have a bullshit stamp. I really do. And I just had it re-inked. And I use it every semester. For some reason, some people actually are excited when they get that stamp on their paper. Yeah, I got one. I guess they sell it on eBay or Frame it or something. I don't know. But I will use it. I'll hurt your feelings because I'm trying to get you ready for something that is a very difficult world. It's called the 21st century business environment. So I'm going to ask you to show me that you can do that. And I can assure you that after the exam, a number of you are going to come up. Why did you mark this? What? You don't like the way I write? Well, no, you suck. So I'll hurt your feelings on that. So be ready for that. I've been doing this for a long time, so I'm ready for whatever. Or something like, I got the exact same answer as that person right next. Well, how do you know that?
Because we were looking at each other's papers. Oh, God. Okay. Let me give you a... Well, actually, I could put the exam up on the overhead if you'd like to see it. Okay. No. Come on, prof. You know, really? What's it going to hurt? Actually, I had a professor who did put the exams up on the overhead, and then he would just talk, and we were writing furiously, and then we're realizing, my God, this is a hard exam. I wish I just waited. Now I can't sleep tonight. Anyway, a couple of things, and I'm going to give you some pointers along the way about what to watch out for as I give you these. One thing, obviously, I'm going to ask you to tell me something about the relationship between risk and return. But remember that risk is not really the important part, and return isn't the important part. There actually is no relationship straight up between risk and return in finance. The risk has to be a certain kind of risk, and the return has to be a certain kind of return. So if I ask you a question like, what is the relationship between risk and return? That's almost like a deceptive bluff on my part. I'm expecting you to answer a slightly more detailed problem. You should, if you're thinking about that, I see some of you actually get what I'm looking for there. Okay, I'm going to give you a question where I'm not going to. Now remember, the questions would come from what I'm telling you. I might miss something. That's why you've got to ask me questions afterwards. If you ask me something, is this going to be on the exam? And it's not, I'll tell you, no, I'm not going to ask that. So keep that in mind. But I could ask you a question where you're looking at a stock chart, stock price chart, and you see an extraordinary amount of price volatility. But you also see a piece of information that indicates that this is a very low-risk security. I want you to explain to me how that can be. As a matter of fact, that actually would be quite common. You're going to see a stock price that is highly volatile, up and down and up and down, whipsawing. But you see that there's some piece of information that's telling you that this is a very safe investment. Or relatively safe, I should say relatively safe investment. And I want you to tell me why that can be. Why that would be actually kind of normal to see something like that. And I talked about this in two different lectures. And the podcasts are available for you to listen to. I think you probably have enough time to listen to all of the podcasts again before the exam. But then again, you might want to do something else like sleep or something, I guess. Speaking of stock charts, I could ask you something along the line of, okay, you are looking at a Yahoo Finance screen for a certain common stock. Explain two important items of information that would be first, that you would look at first, aside from the price. Now, I've shown you enough screens that you know what they look like, and you know where I was focusing, what I kept harping on and farting about on those screens. So I want you to show me now that you know how to look at a screen and how to start from the most important information and work your way out from there. Now remember, those screens have something like, I guess, like a dozen different items of information. Explain why two of them would be important for you to look at first, aside from the price again. I'm going to want you to give me a couple of reasons. I might want you to give me two reasons why accounting financial statements, the ones we always look at, are inadequate for good financial analysis. Why
is accounting information, why are accounting information products inadequate for good financial analysis? Now, a related problem, I could ask you, distinguish between accounting profit and economic profit. In other words, which would be bigger and why? Again, I might ask you to distinguish between accounting profit and economic profit. In terms of which would be bigger and why. That's related to why accounting information products are not very useful to us when we need to get into the deep analysis. I might want you to distinguish between debt and equity in terms of claims on cash flow and what this means about relative risk for investors. Distinguish between debt and equity in terms of claim on cash flows and how this relates to the risk of debt versus equity securities for investors. Now, that might sound like a very complicated question, but that's one of the easier questions. Probably take about maybe a 16-word sentence to kill that one, to nail it to the wall. Now, I could ask you a question. A company has chosen to finance project with equity funds. What are its options? A company has decided, well, we're going to finance this project with equity funds. So it's decided it's going to use equity to fund a project or fund something. And I want you to tell me what its options are. And I will tell you right now there are three options. There are three options. And I went through them. Now, two of them might be pretty obvious, and the third one you'll have to think, remember, or go back and listen to my podcast. It's the one that we almost always forget about in the high-powered world of selling stock and bonds and all that, but there's one that's the hidden, the obvious one that's not really all that sexy, but it's the best one. What is money and what are the three types? This is not one of those questions. I'll tell you right now, if you say it's M1, M2, and M3, you're going to lose all your credit, all points, you'll lose it all. Those are monetary aggregates. Those are artificial inventions. I'm asking, what are the three traditional types of money? Now, I think I brought up that there's a fourth one that has come out of almost nowhere in the 21st century. Don't go into that one. But there are three traditional types. I want you to tell me, what is money? And you tell me exactly the right answer to that. And what are the three types? Now, I caution, on some problems, I'm going to ask you a straight question. You don't go into detail. You just give me the answer. In other ones, I'm going to ask you to say something like, explain. That would be where you would be giving me more detail. But if I just said, what is money and what are the three types? You don't go into some long-winded explanation. You just tell me what money is and name the three types. And by the way, do not ever write a list for me. One, two, three. Don't do that. That just flames my boxers. Too much sharing, teacher. I'll hit you with one or two questions about the Federal Reserve. One that I could ask you is, what are the three, I would want you to list in order or write in order the three tools by which the Federal Reserve, don't say Fed, the Federal Reserve, can conduct monetary policy and give them from the most frequently used to the least frequently used or least frequently used to the most frequently used. Again, what are the three tools by which the Federal Reserve can conduct monetary policy? Giving them in order from the least to the most frequently used or vice versa. Now, we spent a day in class on that, and that's also in that video that was posted. I could ask you, what is liquidity? And give an example of a highly liquid instrument, or maybe an example of a highly illiquid instrument. Again, what is liquidity? And give an example of a highly liquid instrument, or maybe both, a highly liquid instrument and a highly illiquid instrument. Notice in that question, I am just asking for straight up information. You don't go into some explanation. You just say what you have to say and be done with it. You should be able to end that question in about 12 words or so. I might ask you to give two reasons why rising interest rates suppress business activity. Again, why do rising interest rates suppress business activity? Giving two reasons. Now remember, well, I went through that several lectures, but I really nailed it in the lecture on time value of money. And then in the following lecture on annuities and perpetuities. The hell? Anyway, what are the components of the risk premium
in an interest rate?
And explain each. Actually, you know, in a way, even just naming them, their names actually kind of are self-explanatory in that. If I were to ask that, I would probably say, what are the components of the risk premium? Or name the components of the risk premium in an interest rate. Staying on the topic of interest rates, give three interest rates that banks might use as a basis for interest rates they charge on loans. Give three different interest rates that banks might use as a basis for the interest they charge on loans. And I actually gave you four, and I even gave kind of a nod to a fifth cluster that you saw in some of the charts. But there's one that I mentioned that is probably the most popular with banks, but there were others that I brought up too that have that can form the basis for interest rates. Banks charge for regular business loans and consumer loans and all that. Now, moving over to interest rates in terms of bonds, I could ask you, okay, the coupon on a bond is less than the yield to maturity. What do you know about the price of that bond?
Can you read that?
The coupon on a bond is less than its yield to maturity. What do you know about the price of that bond? Eight words, an eight-word sentence, will nail that to the wall. You go more than 10 words, you don't know what you're saying, and I will see it. I could also frame it the other way. The coupon on a bond is higher than the yield to maturity. I could do it the opposite way. But in either case, about eight words will tack that thing to the wall. Now, of course, a classic, I ask it almost too often. But so I might avoid it, but it's always such a temptation. What does the beta of a security measure? What does the beta of a security measure? You have to watch yourself on this question, because you could answer it and leave out a word and lose half of the credit. You could leave out one word and lose half of the credit on this question. And by the way, don't come into my office or send me something. I want to run some answers by you to see if they're perfect. Don't do that. I'm not pre-grading your test. But watch yourself on this. And I've seen this so many times. I think the people knew what they wanted to say, but they left out a critical word. And that critical word just made the answer fundamentally not wrong, but inadequate. And that's something that's going to be true, and you'll see that as your life goes on in the business world, it's that one word that you leave out that can be the disaster, or one data point that you just kind of, it looks like it's an outlier, so you throw it out. And that's the one. Anyway. So keep that in mind. Many years ago, I knew a fellow, he was an old man. He had worked as a technician when the first nuclear bombs were being built to drop on Hiroshima. He wasn't one of the bigwigs, but he and his friends, fellow technicians, had figured out that these little shards of uranium that they were coming off as they shaped the charge, they could actually put them into their lighters and make these beautiful flames with them. And they were sitting in the cafeteria one morning, lighting their cigarettes with these, and one of the very important men, a man named Teller, a scientist, walked by, and he stopped and he looked at them, and he just sat down. He'd never spoken to them before. He was a very quiet man, and he said, "I want you to promise me that you will never do that again. I cannot explain to you why, but I can assure you that you should never do that again. Please." And then he got up and walked away. So that one little thing that they were doing, apparently, he had something in his mind that could actually pretty much end the planet or something. So they all threw their lighters away. Anyway, As the term of a bond approaches zero, what happens to its price? That's a six-word answer. As the term of a bond approaches zero, what happens to its price? That's a six-word answer. And you may recall, I had to beat you up for a while, but then suddenly it came to you, and I had one genius here actually just, boom, suddenly said what it is. These are those almost like, it's so compact, the right answer is, that I can tell if you don't know it by how long your actual answer is. What is the term for the matching of surplus economic units with deficit economic units? And what are the three factors that determine if a match will be successful? What is the term for the matching of surplus economic units and deficit economic units? And what are the three factors that determine whether or not a match will be successful? This would be a little longer just in terms of words, but it's still just a straightforward answer. It doesn't require any deep thought at all. It's just essentially a regurgitation kind of question. And like I said, this test is going to have a combination of thinking questions and more technical questions, which is much like how your life will be in the business world. Now, I'm going to describe, describe a kind of loan to you. And then I would ask you, well, what type of debt instrument is this? Remember, there were three different types of debt instruments in terms of length of time. And then I would also ask you, who is the issuer and who is the buyer? Who is the issuer? And who is the seller, who is the buyer, who is the issuer, who is the purchaser, in some of that terminology. Again, I'll just describe a loan, and I'll say, okay, what type of debt security is being transferred, and which one of the parties is the issuer, and which one is the purchaser? Or which one is the seller and which one is the buyer? It's the same thing. This is not quite as purely just a regurgitation. You have to know the different kinds of debt instruments, and then also you would have to know the difference between the issuer and the purchaser. A little bit deeper question has to do with how do changes in interest rates affect the value of assets? This is actually related to an earlier question. Again, how do changes in interest rates affect the value of assets? This is a little bit deeper question than one that I laid on you a little bit earlier. Because in this question, you have to know that in our world, the word value really comes with a word in front of it. You ever heard that? poem, that sappy poem. Sometimes I'll see it on. Yeah, have you ever noticed the people on Facebook who post words of wisdom are the most effed up of all the people on Facebook? Okay. Yesterday is but a memory, and tomorrow is but a dream. And all that kind of bilge. Okay. That's all I'm going to tell you. The word value is really not too useful to us in business. We need to know something else value. And that would give you a clue as to something about why changes in interest rates drive asset value. So in other words, when interest rates go up, which they are right now, taking all other things, holding them constant, this is going to do something to value of assets. The question is, why does it do that to the value of assets? And that also leads us down a longer path, which I will take you on a little ways in the next part of the course, where part of what makes a company sensitive to the economic conditions, sensitive to interest rates, or insensitive to interest rates, is because some companies, the way they construct their projects, or the types of business model they have, or the projects that they pursue, they don't feel the interest rates. The interest rates aren't there. Remember I told you the dot-coms? They collapsed because they were financing with highly interest rate-sensitive instruments. That's all related to this. Again, this is one of the deeper kinds of questions that I could ask you. But it's actually still a relatively short answer, relatively short, but it's a deeper critical thinking kind of question that will help me understand how far along you are. Okay. Then kind of sort of a no-brainer. It's a little bit more than a no-brainer. Distinguish between systematic and non-systematic risk. And remember what I said, and it was almost like I was saying it in passing, but as a matter of fact, you might have gotten the impression I was talking in passing. Risk means nothing to us. What matters is the pairing of risk with something else. A neighbor down the street had a ladder, and it was an aluminum ladder, and he was on that ladder, clear at the top of the ladder, in a tree, trying to get a cat. Now, you know what I did? I got my cell phone out to record it. Because I didn't care. Because it wasn't my risk. You understand that? Okay? I don't care about it if it's not my risk. But if it is my risk, I do care about it. But I care about it only in the context of something that would be associated with that risk. Is that a light that came on in your eye?
Her
word? Well, I'll let you just think about that. That's important. Because you see, risk, there are two kinds of risk, systematic and non-systematic risk. You do not deserve to be rewarded for one of those. Oh, but there I just gave you the other part of risk. But understand this, the whole world of the 21st century in terms of finance really is turning on the concept of risk, moving it from those who don't want it to those who do want it, and also ridding ourselves of risk that we don't deserve anything for bearing. Let me explain. You, sir, decided that you didn't want to be a college student. You wanted to be a truck driver. You decided you're going to drive a big-ass truck. Well, after a few years, you bought a second one. So you have a double-ass big truck. And over a period of time, you've built up a fleet of... As a matter of fact, the name of your company is Big-Ass Trucks. Seriously, I was down in Texas. If you've ever been to Texas, they allow those insanely long trucks down there with like 55 million wheel axles on. One came by me one day, just on a highway, and it said, guaranteed overnight delivery. And then, now notice those letters, guaranteed overnight delivery. And then underneath it, it said, if God can't deliver it on time, who can? You know, I backed off. I thought he was going to get hit by lightning or something. You son of a bitch, that's pushing it a little bit. But you see, understand, over time, you've got a big fleet of trucks, okay? You are in the business of hauling stuff. As a matter of fact, that's your logo. We haul stuff. So when diesel prices, the prices of hydrocarbon distillates go up, your profit goes down, right? Now, the prices of distillates and all gasoline hydrocarbon products is going down, so your profits are going up. You know what? You are a fool. Your business is not speculation on gas prices. Your business is hauling stuff. So if you ride up and down on profit because of gas prices, I as an investment analyst will say, get rid of that man's stock because he is a dumbass. He doesn't know what business he's in. He wants to be a truck driver, but hey, he also wants to be a speculator on gas prices. You see, all you'd have to do is, there are many, many companies that do this. What you would do is you would take a position in diesel futures so that when diesel futures prices went up, it hurts your truck business, profits go down, but you make money on the futures contracts. And then when diesel prices go down, you make money on your truck business, your profits go up, but you lose on the futures contracts. What that does is that gets rid of the risk of the gas prices. And all your profit reflects then is your hauling business. You can get rid of a risk. You don't need it. By the way, do you know what the term for that is? When we can do this with farmers, corn farmers? Yeah. Hedging. Bingo. That's exactly what it's called. It's hedging. We can do it with grain farmers, corn farmers. A farmer, he doesn't want to speculate. He does not want to ride corn prices up and down. So what we'll do for him is we will set up so that he is in a position in corn futures so that when corn prices go up, well, he'll make more money on his fields, but he'll lose money on the futures. But if corn prices go down, he loses on the field, but he makes money on the future prices. That levels out from year to year his position as a corn farmer. He is no longer at the whim of the world's political situations or demand for corn and all that. It's leveler. We can't perfectly do it, but we can sure as hell get rid of some of that risk. The same thing is true. Well, I won't get into that, but with respect, well, I'm real sick and I just don't know what I'm going to do. Well, why don't you have health insurance? That could pay for it. Now, there's a problem there is because health insurance is not easily available. Even under the Affordable Care Act, it's still a burden for the poor people. That's why that's a financial market where we ask not whether or not these people deserve it. It's just a simple question of how do we fix it with the contracts, with risk moving risk from those who don't want it to risk to those who for those who do want it. That's what it's all about, is moving risk around. So keep that in mind as you're answering questions for me. Now, your turn. Ask me questions. What do you want to know about this exam? Yeah.
Is there any multiple choice?
No, there's no multiple choice. No multiple choice. No calculations. You are answering just four questions. Yeah. No. I can do that. I usually do a little more of that, like a couple of the, I might say for a, something, an essay question, well, the times interest earned is less than one. What do you know about the company or something? But not on this exam. I'm trying to stay, keep you away from the formulas as long as I can. It's a good question you're asking, though. Yeah. That would make it hard for you to answer. That would make it hard for you to answer in one sentence if I did that. But you heard every one of those is almost verbatim what I could ask you. So you could frame. There were some where there were different parts that you had to put together for. But I would not ask you two very separate things in a single question. Other. Oh yeah, go. 4x6.
You said you guaranteed that there will be at least one question on the Federal Reserve.
I didn't
Sounds like a yes.
I don't like to give guarantees because every time I've given a guarantee, it's come back to bite me in the ass in my life, you know? Let's say, okay, here's the best I can do. And I quote from some very famous character from another era, could be Wabbit. Yeah.
A couple of days ago, you told us a question. What is the relationship between price and the spread between coupon and yield?
I'm not going to do that one on this exam. I'm not going to do that. There's exactly. And I'll tell you why. Your compatriots in the other class, they got a snow day where I really hammered in on that. And that stupid video I tried to run, well, there was something really weird-ass going on in that video because I was like all kinds of distorted. I don't know. I was thinking maybe I should see a doctor or something, but because it was just the other class did not have enough depth. I just hammered it on you that day. Didn't have a chance for the other class. Just straight up honest with you. That's why. Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
What's a perpetuity? Can you explain the difference between that and an annuity?
Well, a perpetuity is an annuity with an infinite time stream for the cash flow. It's just a perpetuity is an annuity where the N periods is where N equals infinity. It's a specialized kind, as a matter of fact.
So, four questions, one sentence answers. We'll be out of here in like 5 minutes.
Well, not 5 minutes. I mean, do write. Can you freaking write so I can read it? I've got these people who write microscopic. They're always accountants, and that just is ridiculous. And then I got the people. Are you writing in Yeti or what? But I've had people who can finish this exam quite successfully in about 10, 15 minutes if they really know the material. Then again, I've had people who finish it in 10, 15 minutes, and that was because they just bombed the hell out of it. And then I've had last semester. Understand, these are four questions you could already see that they're, if you know your stuff, you should be finished in, you know, maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes. The entire freaking hour and 15 minutes, there were a couple of people sitting there, scratching their head, pulling, you know, if you don't have it by now, you know, go, forget it, you know, damn, I'll answer it for you, I want to leave. But no, quite honestly, though, it should not take you. And this is something I'm trying to convince you is that you can just spin around and spin around. I had dinner just last a weekend with two executives, and they were talking about they give their these new employees these projects, and the employees are just going on forever and ever, struggling and just pulling their hair out. And that's something that I want to get you to the point where you are avoiding. Come in with confidence. As we used to say in my combat battalion, go in with your head down and your fangs out. Just get it done and then walk out the door. And hope to God that you answer the questions correctly, obviously. Anything else? Go.
If the only material will be used for review is listening to your podcast.
Oh, and look into your notes.
Well,
the book brings up a lot of things I bring up, but those online things are for the book. This is for our special relationship. Fine, whatever. Yeah. Say that again. Oh, no, no, not for this one. You know, yes, I've brought up people that need to go to burn in hell for all eternity. You know, but I've mentioned companies that are good, companies that are bad. But on this one, no, no. Yeah. A time frame, not for this exam. On the final, yeah, I might talk to you about the time frame when the Fed started contracting M1 and all of that, but I'm not going to do that on this first exam. I'm shaping it so that the two midterm exams are more of the technical, and then on that final exam, you broaden out and you're answering more of the deeper kinds of questions. That gives you more time to prepare for those deeper questions. Anything else you want? Yeah.
Are there five questions on the test tomorrow in the thing you just read?
I might have missed something, but I don't think so. I'm not giving you any guarantee, but at the same time, it's one of those, this one's not could be Wabbit, this is probably Wabbit. Okay? What else? Okay, that's all I have for you. I thank you.